Clubhouse.
Welcome back to Three Hosts in a Beacon. This is our coverage for the second episode of the second season of MGM Plus's Beacon 23. This is Paul from Pod Clubhouse, back again with my co-hosts, Gabby and Inez. It's almost like we haven't even left from the first episode.
Oh my gosh, I can't get rid of you guys.
I know, so excited. I really missed you, so I'm ecstatic.
Well, I know you didn't miss me because you beget me. You begotten me last episode.
Well, I had forgotten, but thanks for the reminder, sister.
She forget you.
Look at Paul showing some claws.
Oh, yeah. I liked this episode better than the first one. I don't know how you guys felt, but this reminded me of some of those more endearing Star Trek episodes where they get stuck in the holodeck and there's no way out unless they figure out the problem and they've got this alternate universe that they need to solve. Or maybe it's not even the holodeck, it's some other plane of existence. Yeah. Like that one episode where people keep disappearing and no one seems to recognize that anybody's disappearing until there's just one person left on the ship. You know, it's just like this weird simulation that they're going through. You know that one? Oh, I think it's Dr. Crusher's the only one that's left.
Dr. Crusher and Riker and Crusher were all the way there at the end.
I think that's right.
That was a Crusher episode.
Yeah.
So when I was thinking about, I don't know why I was thinking about it, but when you were mentioning Star Trek, I immediately went to the episode where Picard is on a different planet and they speak in like, not metaphors, but like analogies. Do you remember that one?
The autistic planet. Right.
Are they the autistic planet?
No, it's an episode where I've seen a paper written by a autistic academic, I guess, or something, where they highly identified with the people in that episode because it was like the speech pattern that they used. It was in English, but it was not understandable. And that's how it felt for him to grow up with autism. He knew that they were saying words that he knew, but the order didn't make sense.
Interesting. Okay, I'm gonna have to read that paper. I like that. But yeah, that was the vibe that I got for some reason, just because I did feel like I was kind of lost in this episode, but I was there for the ride and enjoying myself. And then at the end, of course, it all came together and I felt really good about it. So I was Picard for a moment, and thank you, Beacon 23, for doing that for me. But yeah, cinematography in this episode was so beautiful. So I wonder if maybe that's why you liked it more, Paul.
I liked the little set that they had built, you know, the very corporate vibe hallway with the corporate inspired helpers like Eric and the tribunal of judges or whatever they were, but all speaking in very corporate jargon to her. It seemed it's meant to just kind of be like a soulless or soul sucking kind of environment. So it achieved that for me.
It was like the good place, like back office stuff. I love the old technology that they had, right? Like the old phone with the coiled cable to
fax
it.
Machine or the pre-power typewriter she was using.
Yeah. All of that was super fun. I just right off the bat, just like seeing, I think what I got most excited about, and it's like the dumbest thing, but it's so cheesy, it's so great, is the ones and zeros everywhere. That was my favorite thing. And it took me back to when I was in college. I actually like researched and learned how to write in ones and zeros with my friend, Stefan. And so we would write ones and zero messages to each other on like AOL, IM, on AIM. I love that stuff so much. And I'm like, wow, I haven't done it in years. And this episode made me like want to go back and try to like relearn all of that.
It might be fun for you then to try to freeze frame, you know, like we did
read it.
Yeah, because we got to see the harmony sign, but she pointed that out to us. Then I looked it up. And yes, it said harmony in binary.
Yes.
But there were other signs that you could see if you were eagle-eyed and fast.
Yeah, I know. I wrote that down. I was like, I need to relearn that and come back and translate.
It's just an odd little place. recently I watched kind of like a conspiracy theory or something video about The Shining and the shooting of The Shining and how the architecture of the Overlook Hotel, as presented in the film, does not make sense. The rooms turn back into themselves and there are doors that should open to empty air and windows that in interior offices and all kinds of weird stuff that just don't make sense. That kind of lend to this otherworldliness of the Overlook. This little set that they built for AI rehabilitation had some of those same things, like where she saw the window shadows and she opened the door. There's nobody there, you know, stuff like that. Spooky, but kind of incomplete, too.
So you're just talking about like the incomplete rooms and everything. Do you think that's just because she's not completely there? Like if she was actually there and not also with Halen on the beacon, then it would be more complete?
It's not that she's incomplete. It's that it's incomplete because it was meant to be a facade.
Exactly, exactly. So like if there was there, because there really are headquarters. And so I'm wondering like the real headquarters, like is the binary, are those signs something that was like part of the incomplete? It's like the holodeck, right? Like sometimes there's a glitch. Like, so do you think that was like a glitch or do you think that in their actual corporate, like it is like that?
I bet it's not. I bet they were counting on, or Olive was counting on, that either she never was at headquarters or it had been so long ago. Again, they mentioned this, that she just doesn't really remember all the details.
Yeah, they were gaslighting her.
Yeah, basically. Having it look kind of right, place a few prop, you know, fax machines around.
Super confused the whole time, yeah.
Well, it was confusing, especially when they bring up things like the impermanence of the way time passes. Have this by the end of the day, but that doesn't ever seem to really matter.
I think that it was something that Olive must have just created in the quick time frame that he like sent her off and then he disappeared. I just assume that those people that are in there, that those are all just created in this plane for just this one purpose of retrieving the data from her and resetting her. And then that's the most amount of programming that Olive has put into this prison plane for her.
Wait, but what about Eric?
I feel like Eric is like a real thing that is programmed in there, but I don't actually think that, I don't know. I don't know if these AIs are plugged in from a plane far away or like a part of them just downloaded into this isolated simulation, or if he just created them and his backstory and stuff is not real. But because he is a real AI with a real function in this specific plane, you know, that's why he's programmed with what to say and do or whatever, that he does end up negotiating and helping out Harmony. But I mean, I feel like his punishment of what she ended up seeing was just like a scare tactic. Gabby, we've gone back and forth about my feelings on ones and zeros. And I didn't really feel sad about Eric, what happened. I think that he was just created for this. And then, and it was just, I don't know. It's just this own downloaded thing in this very isolated computer. I don't think this is something that was plugged in. That's why it was so frail and failed.
If that's the case, then where did Bart come from and why was he there in the first place?
Bart is already on Beacon 23. This plane that she's on is in the beacon. It's in the same framework of where she met with Bart previously. It's on the same plane that Olive met with Finch when he tortured him. Like, it's just connected in the environment, but it's like kind of like you see in those movies that has like the other world, the upside down worlds, right? They're like walking in the same space.
Like Inception.
But I don't know. I was thinking like Stranger Things. Like,
oh, I don't
like
watch.
Strange. And you know, do you know what I'm talking about, Paul?
Yeah, yeah. But I was trying to figure out if her prison plane was like a one-for-one overlay onto the beacon, or if it's not that literal.
I got a sense that it is kind of like that because of the error message from the printer with the error message from the computer when he's trying to send something out. And then like that's this error that's happening there.
Right.
Then the connection between when she found Bart and then she turned Bart back on. And then you see Bart floating around on Halen's side. That's like happening real time stuff. Like he doesn't know why it turned back on. He just knows that it's back on, but like she doesn't know either that this is not just isolated. You know, she hasn't figured out where she is yet, right? So there, I think that is overlaid, and she's just seeing her own walls because that's what she's been blinded. And so I think when she figured it out from the physical damage of the TV, somehow translated into the physical damage that she was seeing, like on her end, like you know, when she finally broke through.
Yeah, no, that's great. You right. Thank you. I get it. And I feel a lot better. I think I was I was just along for the ride and really just appreciating the colors. Because, again, the cinematography in this episode was really beautiful for me.
I was thinking to just the set design in comparison to all of the craftsmanship that had to go into making the beacon pretty convincing and nearly, I think it's 360 degree, so they can look anywhere and they're still pretty much in the beacon, which is not the way sets are normally built if they can avoid it. That's tough. You know, that's expensive stuff. Whereas this set was just hallways, rooms, a room or two.
Ooh,
you
interesting.
Know?
So you think this was like a budget cut episode?
Nah, I wouldn't say that. Just maybe like a quick way to complete what they needed to do without getting flashy about it.
Yeah, you're right.
But still, I mean, it's convincing enough.
Yeah, lots of symbolism there. That was the one for one. Okay, cool. Yeah, and it was like, it's really pretty. It was visually stimulating, hardcore. So I was really happy with the change of pace in every aspect, including like these additional characters, which like we should totally get into, these crazy like HR individuals.
Oh yeah, they were definitely HR individuals.
Do you think that the writers of this are the same writers for like The Office, of their very anti-HR stance? Like why Michael Scott hated Toby so badly. There's really like these three individuals were like so odd and weird and terrifying all in one.
Yeah.
I thought they were like pro HR stance because, you know, it was like empowered HR. What HR dreamt of being.
I don't know, man. The way that Mara would redirect every snipe that Randall had into a more agreeable, de-escalating language that is so perfectly trained. No, I think that's actually satirizing that personality that very much exists in corporate life.
Yeah, totally necessary. I was all about that. I'm like, thank you for doing your job, ma'am. Excellent. Other lady really needs to get it together, Randall. But who did you guys identify with of these three?
Oof. Identify with? I'm afraid I couldn't. I was on Harmony's
side. I'm afraid you have
side.
To pick one.
Oh my God. I would have to identify most with the soulless middle one, Mara, trying to keep the peace and get the objective sorted out, not through, you know, aggressive tactics like Randall. And I'm not even sure what the game the other person was playing that said very little and died fastest.
She was said very little and died the fastest. That's funny. No, she was anger. Like the what was her name from Star Trek Next Generation? I'm blanking. Counselor Troy. She was the Troy of this group. And I thought that was cool because she has experience. So I guess that was like kind of nice. She was kind of like a Bart, right? Because she had experienced all of these things. So, okay, sorry. Rewinding. We talked about like Harmony and her resetting and rebooting and how maybe that would be like Bart. And you guys said that she's a newer AI, so she's like capable of more things. Well, now we get to see with this person, this like non-binary AI who is Counselor Troy equivalent, she or they had felt all these things for their aide or for their human. And then they rebooted her, and now she's kind of like addicted to it and like so incredibly desensitized that she's just Bart, but like a newer version of what Bart could be or what could happen. So anyway, I just think that was really interesting. I liked her a lot.
I don't know. Bart was such a talker, and this one had like five words. Right? So,
well, you know, they rebooted and reset and rehabilitated her. They like tortured her, and this is a shell of a aid person, AI.
But still not matching anything to Bart. Even after Bart got like invaded and rehabbed, also, but. I don't know. I mean, maybe you're onto something. I'll have to think about it some more. At this moment, I'm trying to think that, you know, at first I wanted to say that I also was like the Mara, because I am a rule follower and all about the success of the company. When, you know, whenever I do my job, I take it very seriously. But also when people like are not doing what they're supposed to do, I'm internally Randall. My insides are boiling and angry, and I'm just like, here, fuck you, you know. So I'll go ahead and be the Randall of us three.
Excellent. So then I'll be like Bart upgraded version. But what did you, how did you describe her? I forgot her name.
I didn't catch
doesn't
it.
Doesn't talk a lot, dies quickly.
Yeah, it doesn't.
And I feel like they said pronoun he, but I don't know. I have to go back. Sorry. We can probably cut this whole thing out if we get the right answer.
Yeah, I did not get the full story on that character, except
really
that they were. Yeah, well, in terms of like pronoun appropriateness, just their role in the show. And I did not catch their name. I got Mara. I got Randall. I did not get the third judge. Shame on me.
No, and I don't see it on their website either. When I do the cast for season 2 on Google, like of the three, I only see Randall. I don't even see the other two, right? Like there's only 9 of them showing up on this list. So it's, you know, it's not our fault.
I mean, we are supposed to be experts, so why don't
I am
we...
going right now. I am on IMDb trying to find the answer, and I will speak up the moment that it happens.
Yeah.
So yes, I think that I am the third upgraded AI then. I will identify with that one. I really did think it was a cool approach, though, how she's the reader. She was necessary. She's the profiler. They are the profiler. I'm going to call them they. They are the profiler of those three HR. And I thought that was cool. And it was kind of weird, though, that third AI had this obsession with feelings. It's like a drug dog. That's, I guess, what the equivalent may have been. This AI is there to seek out this weak point of all of the AIs.
Maybe like because this AI already had this like knowledge within there, they just did a programming over it to like imprison them, basically, to like still have the power capability. But now its only purpose is to be this like emotion sniffer.
Yeah, that's exactly what I thought. And I think that's a really important aspect that they had to include. I mean, you have to remember, right? Olive is the one who sent her over here. So he's the one that's like, okay, we need this kind of AI to scope it out. And he's extreme. So these three were very extreme. And that was fun for me. Absolutely.
What do you think about the fact that Harmony could actually get killed in this plane, or that she can like feel things? I loved when she took a drink of the water and was just like, I never knew that I could do that, right? Like just...
Yeah,
like,
what the heck? Like, Paul, answer.
Unlike where she's projected into the physical plane, this is an all digital or whatever the technology is then.
Oh, right. Plane. Okay.
And so it's a apples to apples conversion for her. That's how she was able to kill, you know, was that they had to play by the same rules of physical realness. That's how she could stab and strangle and blunt force trauma her way to freedom.
We're totally missing. Yeah, we should talk about the action in this. That was pretty intense. Good choreography there, I thought.
I didn't quite see it coming with the stabby stabby.
It was so good. I think I liked Mara's. When is it Mara's? Who's the one that she like choked with the phone?
It's Randall.
Randall, when she was like leaning down, like with her on the back, right?
Yeah.
But it was strapped multiple times, like, woo! Yeah,
Where does she have it in her? I know. I'm like, oh, it's because of Aster. I was like, that's Aster. I see Aster right now. Some Aster moves. She just watched her train, so she learned everything. Yeah.
Now these killings are like special. Now there's like so sentimental sweet. Memories.
That's our girl. When Esther did it, we're like, damn, bitch, like, you crazy. And then now we're like, oh, let it live on. You, good job.
Well done, Natasha Mumba.
Exactly.
I thought it was also interesting that they kept kind of having her drawn to a cup, like this whole gesture thing about getting like a cup, drinking with water or something, like from the very beginning, right? She like dropped the cup and she went to go get a replacement cup. And it's almost like she didn't really know why she was like needing to like get this cup. And then when she finally does take a drink, she's like, I never knew that I could do that. Like, so why was she so compelled to like make sure she got a replacement cup and had a cup around her if she like never even done this before? What, like, why do you think that that's because as soon as she drank it, there was like something happened, right? Like she got like, she like glitched and stuff.
She got glitchy. Yeah, maybe she was just trying to figure it out, finding the patterns and then finding weak points and pressing them harder and harder. It just
felt like a subconscious work. It didn't seem like she was actively, like I could see her actively solving other stuff, right? We saw her doing that with the messages and, you know, all of these things. We saw her actively do stuff, but it just seemed like she was not really sure why she was doing this stuff with the cup.
That's kind of how I problem solve as well. It's just like you get your hands dirty and then you like you just move it around and figure out what. So you don't know what the purpose is of something that you're working on, but you know it has a purpose and you just keep fiddling with it until it comes to you. So that's what I got from this. But I guess like maybe we should talk about like the actual storyline from beginning to end, because I thought it was effective. I felt like even though it was like the repetition of just like, okay, we'll talk to you again later. We'll talk to you again next time. And it got a little like weirder each time. I think that it did reach a climax pretty well. It wasn't like flat throughout this, even though it was kind of repetitive, but maybe it was like because of the light and because Randall like had some things to say and the whole like someone pops up every so often. So I guess it was like kind of weird. It was kind of slow, but I thought it still really did a good job at like keeping things moving forward, at least for me. And I really loved the flashbacks with Esther. That was really sweet. I actually like kind of cried. Actually, I did cry, not kind of cry. I teared up for sure when toward the end of the episode, you find out that it is Esther and she says like, how long will you be with me? And she and Harmony responded, forever. And I cried because I'm like, she was with her forever. Like, that was Aster's forever. Aster's gone now. But it was forever. And everyone else in Aster's life died in front of her except Harmony. Harmony was her everything, like her best friend, her mom, her caregiver. So I got really sentimental in that part. And I appreciate that they added it in there with all the rest of the craziness.
Do you think that those scenes were meant to show us where the trek to gaining her humanity began? Was those early lessons with this moody teenage girl? Or not even moody, traumatized teenage girl, because she said she lost her mom.
Oh my God, I'm so glad that you corrected yourself just then, Paul. But yeah, no, it was definitely some parallels with Bart. And that was also special to me. And I totally forgot that Bart also was like imprinted on Aster. So now that I'm thinking about that, yeah, I think it was totally meant to be kind of signaling to us that that's the case.
See, I thought that this one was paced just fine because it had this mystery of what's real. I mean, instantly you were starting to try to figure out why is this place so weird, and paralleling in those couple shots with Halen and what's going on in the beacon, semi mirroring events happening in her prison plane. So all those things fit together for me in a way that kept things moving on a quicker pace than the previous episode. And I didn't feel too repetitive because the tribunal, like Randall, she had no patience from the beginning, but she was kind of infecting the process. And then Olive is demanding results sooner, even though time has no meaning there. And so the stakes seemed to increase as the time went on.
True.
The episode.
I'm a little confused then what Eric's this was, if this is all like some kind of little simulation, it's not like real place that's a real holding center for these AI who don't have like a person to imprint on, why was he there?
Maybe he was there for the sake of helping to complete the illusion, but maybe he wasn't complete, you know? Like how he was duped into helping Harmony for the sake of coffee mm-hmm. and
breaks.
Yes. I thought that, that was right. Probably the richest satire of corporate people when they're negotiating for how using the fax machine, but you have to make me a coffee.
Oh, God. Yeah, that was fun.
Yeah, I mean, I remember asking you for, like, work favorite Paul's, and I would say I would bring you, like, a Diet Coke.
Yes. Yeah, that would unlock the vault.
All of a sudden, he definitely has time for me now.
Yeah, but I think he was there to complete the illusion, and that's why he was not everything that the other three were. Because he wasn't supposed to be.
Mm-hmm. He had holes, right? Because she was like, didn't you just come from, you know, because he's saying he's about to go on break. And she's like, weren't you just on break? And then I was seeing these things as holes. But then also it could be a sense of time is different in this space. So when she thinks might have just been a break like 5 minutes ago, maybe it was like 5 days ago or something, right? Like, you know, it could be that, but I was taking it as like, this is kind of like a sloppy simulation kind of thing. Like early on my notes, I had written in the episode, like, is this a fake prison for Harmony? I was I was fresh off of episode one where Olive took Finch into that space. And I thought, you know, he kind of was really abrupt and sudden in doing this for Harmony. I don't see why not. And then the parallels were happening more obviously, you know, in those connections. But I think he's there for like the credibility and to legitimately help whatever the ecosystem for this isolated thing needed to be. He was part of all of that.
That's great. Yeah, thank you. Because I was just enjoying the show. Really, these colors, cinematography just got me. The acting with all the AI. I was just here for the ride, enjoying it. And like, ooh, I don't know what that is. Ooh, look at that empty space. That's just fine. Like, I don't need to know any answers. This is fun for me.
It was a really, really fun episode. And you know what? You know, I always looking for my cheese somewhere. And I really liked
where was the cheese?
Well, one part was a transition scene where it's like Halen laying down with his head down, and you see the camera pan like first to the stack of notebooks, and one of the binders says communication manual, and then it keeps going to Halen, and then you hear Harmony saying Halen. So I just thought that was kind of like a cute little cheesy transition. Am I the only one?
Cheese is a subjective term, and cheese isn't always a universal descriptor.
Right. I appreciated Eric and his cheese, but it was just like the satire of the corporate world. I liked his attitude and I liked his priorities, and maybe I just, you know, appreciated and identified with him just like loving breaks the most and doing whatever he can for them. And it didn't have to make sense for me. I was like, stack them up. let's just do that. I'm focused on that. So I don't know. I was just riding and swimming in the cheese.
You know, and I really was enjoying everything happening in the AI side of that environment, that setting. But I was on a contrast experience over on the Halen side where it's like he gets pissed off and he just starts breaking shit. I appreciated he was just like, I'm here for the long haul. I'm learning. I'm getting these things done, slowly fixing up the beacon little by little. But then, like, let me get pissed off and, like, destroy something. And I'm like, this place is, like, in way worse shape now than what it was when he first got started.
He lost it. He has no hope.
I know. I get that. He's like, it's obviously like showing like he's super depressed, very, very dark space. So whenever like the connection, the reunion kind of experience with him and Harmony, like I felt like such a huge relief and joy for both of them for like being like reunited in that way.
I did think they carried the destruction of the beacon, you know, to mirror Halen's emotional downfall. Man, I mean, that you can see, like I said, like the oxygen was running out and other shit like that was happening. I mean, good God, there are better ways to go crazy.
Yeah, that was 68 days. Oh my God. It said he was 68 days, he mentioned at one point.
68
yeah,
days.
Yeah, I guess it's like, did so he can't open a window? Was he trying to exit the thing? Is it all just powered down? Because is he trying to die, or do you think he was trying to live and then he just lost it for a sec and has to suffer the consequences?
I think that's closer to it.
Poor Halen.
Yeah, poor Halen. I mean, at the very end there, he was pretty well done, though. Beacon was completely beaten up, and if she hadn't used Bart's remote to say something to him, then he would have figured out a way to kill himself, I'm pretty sure.
Right, so it's going to be cool. So the next episode, or yeah, as we move on, like, are we going to be able to see him repairing the beacon? Or is it going to be one of those, like, time passed and they found all the spare parts in their back pocket?
Well, he was doing two things in this episode, right? When he wasn't destroying the beacon, he was fabricating pieces of a spaceship and welding them together in that microwave thing that they have. I guess that's like
yeah.
It can 3D print anything from poison antidotes to spaceship parts. So yeah, he was doing that. He said something about 7,000 more parts and I'll have a spaceship. And I think that's
what he was repairing.
Yeah. Yeah. Or making something. But yeah. So maybe that's what they'll be doing. Cause he, you know, we've said this last season, the show is still called Beacon 23. So chances are there's going to be a lot of time spent on the beacon. But if I'm Halen, I'm thinking I want to get off of here regardless of what the name of this show is.
I mean, Halen has been just talking about leaving from the beginning anyway, though. So why would that change now?
Maybe the only thing, just to be devil's advocate for my own point, would be that with the beacon's light non-functioning lighthouse, then the original purpose for the beacon was to warn ships about the dark matter. And now there's nothing to do that if there's no one there.
Okay.
And there was a ship right. That was on its way in this episode.
Okay, so then are you saying Halen cares or doesn't care about that?
Man, I'm calling it both ways, Gabby. Gay-bye.
There we go. Get it right.
Yeah, I'm theorizing both things. He wants to go, but he knows why he could need to stay.
Wait, why? To help other ships not crash?
Yeah, yeah. That's it.
I don't think he cares that much about that. I think he mostly wants to go.
He tried to help that one ship. It didn't work.
That's how he got in the first episode, right?
Right.
Yeah.
That's how he ended up with Aster, right? Wasn't that the one that was
holding her? Look where that brought him.
Well, no, there was a second ship in this one.
That was his bestie. Yeah. Of course, brought him his bestie.
Oh, wait. In this one, there was a second ship?
Mm-hmm. But the warning system didn't work.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Okay, you're right. He is a nice guy with ethics, I guess. And he's stuck on the beacon, but Olive can come whenever he wants. So yeah, it's pretty helpless, like, to have an Olive hate you, right? Because if he survives, then do you think Olive's just going to come back and be like, oh, that's inconvenient, let me kill you? Or is he going to say, good job, you deserve to last a little longer?
I mean, when you'd call him Q, a lot of the way that he acts with people is kind of Q-like, you know? He could come back with a specific purpose if the artifact is back and doing its artifacting.
Well, he's got Rocky.
Oh my gosh. He
didn't flush Rocky when he had the chance. He just kind of buried him in the gruel mix.
Again, why did he do that?
I think he was going crazy because he heard Harmony's voice.
Mm-hmm.
And he...
Now, why did he keep Rocky?
I don't know. I think he probably sentimental, maybe. I don't know if he still has that draw to it.
He has to.
You know? Or if it's because, like, this whole mess this is from this thing, and this is, like, something that Aster cared about. I don't know. I don't know. That's a good question.
All I have are questions. I'm sorry, guys. All I have are questions on this time. Because I was just so focused on Harmony storyline in this that I didn't really put much thought into where Halen's going with everything. I was just like, he's gonna make it. He'll survive. He always does. He'll get off the ship. He'll come back. He'll, I don't know, talk to a rock. It's gonna be just fine.
Well, most of the screen time was for Harmony, so you can't be blamed for feeling that way.
I'm curious on what the actor thinks about his character too, and where it's going, and if it's easy to just be sad and beat up on a ship. Because Harmony is so dynamic, and I feel like they're kind of making him, I don't know, to me, he's just simpler. He's also a male character, and that usually happens. But anyway, I'm just really curious on what's happening next, and I need to just focus on what happened in this episode.
No, that's a fair question. We've discussed the high points of this episode in terms of what went down in the illusion. We believe we know the nature of the illusion at this point, although at the very end, it'd be interesting to see if Harmony still kind of exists in this parallel plane going forward, or are we just going to experience her through Bart's remote unit and that's it?
Oh, yeah. I think we are going to dip into both a little bit, but I really hope we see her in Bart because the nostalgia will make me very happy.
Yeah, maybe a sort of thing where like he's beaten up enough of the beacon that the hologram emitters or however her technology works don't work yet. Because he went too apeshit beating up everything in the beacon.
Wait, but... Okay, sorry. Okay, so QTA is the AI...
Is bosses, Olive's right? Company, I think, yes.
And then
ISA, yeah. They're like
are the traffic control.
Basically, yeah.
Okay, so they care about the beacon. So wouldn't they show up at some point to try and like help repair it?
We've been wondering about them because they've been talked about, but every mention of the condition of control and people and government in the galaxy that we've experienced has only been talked about in terms of decline, and things aren't as good as they used to be. So could ISA come and try to figure out what's going on with their beacon? Yes. But will they? Maybe not, because it's just one beacon with one person out there. And they might, with whole colonies failing, they might have, if that's within their jurisdiction anyway, they might have bigger fish to fry.
I don't know. Like, so far they've been putting replacement people to man these beacons, and the beacons can communicate with each other, right? So other beacons have to know at some point that this traffic light over here isn't working. And so I just feel like somebody at some point is going to care like that this happened. And I hope, I mean, they have been referred to plenty. So I do hope that we get to meet them at some point.
Because well, I think we've been waiting for them. We've been waiting for this group of people. Like, it's been, they've been coming since the beginning of season one.
If you recall, Bart had heard, I believe he had heard from the AI from another beacon somehow that the terrorist group, the Column, had destroyed it.
That's right.
Right. And when Solomon so came on board. He has said that he had been unmanned for some period of years. I forget how many, but it something like 20 stands out in my mind. That might not be right. Actually, the lack of Bart might be the thing that had set them off as like the main issue. Because if the presence of Bart made it so that they could leave it unmanned for a period of years, then if there's no Bart, then that seems like the thing that would trigger a repair person to make a trip.
So someone has to show up because that matters. Black matter matters. Anyway, yeah. Okay, so that's where I'm going to say this is going. And I look forward to meeting some ISA folk.
They're going to come in and see the conditions of the place. They're like, what in the hell have you been doing?
I know. Poor Lighthouse.
Are those dead bodies? What the hell?
You don't think he would have sent them out already?
Yes.
Jeez, Halen. Well,
maybe he's got them rigged up like Home Alone style in case anyone looks in the windows.
It's like, their driver's here. It's like the guy driving in the HOV lane with the dummy.
Right.
He has gone mad. So let's just, I like that story. Let's stick with that. Okay. Yes, the dummies on the windows. floating around up there. Oh, so I thought it was a cute touch, though, at the very beginning of this episode when Harmony's in her office and she sees the lighthouse. I guess that was the first thing that made me suspicious. And then, of course, I immediately, like, dropped whatever, like, skepticism I had because the colors. But it was a cool connection. I thought it was weird that she would have the lighthouse picture because I'm like, okay, I thought that belonged to, like, the first person.
Avalon?
Yeah, so I thought that was kind of weird. Yeah, Avalon, I think, was her name.
That was, like, the first foreshadowing moment. Yeah. Mm-hmm,
that they were on the beacon. So, anyway, I caught that. But then again, they had really pretty colors, and they distracted me. Good job. Good job. So, I just dropped that. I didn't care. And then at the very end, I was like, oh, no, duh. Okay, cool. You guessed it, like, outright, though. So, congratulations, Inez. I'm proud of you.
We beget you.
Wait, okay, so high, low, high for this episode.
High's got to be the killing of the HR goons.
All of them? Or one in particular?
Well, I thought the stabbing was, since it came so quickly and that one individual had done the least to provoke her. So, or at least...
done the least?
Yeah.
That's funny.
Yeah, so...
She sniffed her a lot.
So if I had to pick one of the three killings, it would be the stabbing with the scissors. But the whole scene together was my high, my low. I was just so tickled by the whole production, you know, with like you mentioned, the old style office equipment and the setting and the way they shot it, kind of like, if you noticed when they're gaslighting her and hitting her with question after question, the focus on her shot and the framing of her shot is all wonky, you know, like she's not in the right part of the frame and the focus is bad, so she's blurry. But when they would cut back to the tribunal judges, they were all clear again, as if to suggest that they're getting to her and she's starting to doubt herself. And the judges are all perfectly aware of what they're doing because they're still clear.
Oh, that's super interesting. I had a completely different experience on that exact scene.
Oh, yeah? What'd you get?
I thought that she was like, that Harmony was like extra cool with like answering these like hard things, and you're seeing her eyes go into this like processing quickly and like a bit stressed out, and then they would shoot out more questions about like what was the percentage chance of that you could have intervened, blah, blah, blah. And then she would answer the one and then go and just instantly answer like 3.something%, you know, or 3.something% instances were like possible ways that she could have intervened on something, right? Like the whole back and forth of all of that, I thought that just made her look like extra extraordinary.
So that was actually her nerves being tested, but keeping her cool. Yeah. I see.
Yeah, that's what I got too. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, but that's that cool too. That like you did see like that, because I probably like, you know, because she, Natasha did such an amazing job acting on scenes because she's so amazing. Much of everything that she does is just the slightest movements with her eyes. The smallest, like tiniest movements and orientations of her face. Like she is a robot machine. She is also like, you're seeing a conflict happen, but you're not seeing any conflict happen. Like, I feel like I can tell that she's like, I can see her processing, and I don't know. I just like love that. And I love her.
She's an excellent actress. Yeah.
Oh my God, yeah. Excellent actress. And that scene I thought was so amazing because like, I'm like, oh my God, Harmony is such a badass.
Yeah. She is like really perfecting the hybrid of being a human and holographic AI. Like she's beyond them in that scene. About her acting, like I think it's just like how she carries herself. Like she's so convincing as an AI, her posture, everything. It reminded me of iRobot, and I don't know why, but a lot of like the people who worked with the robots and even the robots themselves, they always like are these perfect characters with perfect posture. I mean, just the way that she moves, it's just like a beautiful robot dance in each scene. And she's just, her presence is so powerful. That means that when she, in that scene, she had like distress and like emotions and worry that were really deep, because you know that she's worried, not just because they're like, she's confused about what's going on, but she also has this like hurt and pain of this fear of losing Aster and losing herself. And so like Bart in the last season, when he lost himself, he went super crazy and he mourned, and she just watching her in that scene was like watching her protect herself and protect that. And it was really subtle, but to me really powerful and impressive, and she's amazing, and I want to like talk to her.
So going back to my low, I guess I don't have true low point, except I didn't exactly love it when Halen threw Bart's remote on the floor, or not threw it, he just let it drop, and it, and then when it broke, he kind of kicked at it. Not that that's a bad bit of plot or anything like that, I just didn't like to see it.
That makes me really happy. Thank you for caring about Bart. Next high.
I guess the finale, when she manages to get her voice to come out of the Bart unit that is somehow reassembled.
Okay, and as you go.
Okay, so my high, the fact that this whole entire episode was like everything I'm always asking for, which is like, give me more AI perspective. This is my favorite way that they tell this story, and this perspective is the show so far. I love it. So fun. And this was extra fun also because I am a nerd in the corporate arts. These are my people. So like Paul, I'm able to kind of like chuckle and appreciate like some of like the setup and the satire associated with all of it. And then it's also tied in an AI perspect layer. Like, that's so fun. Let's see, my low. I don't think that I have a low as far as like something that I'm personally unhappy with about how the episode is made. So I'll just say that my low was like the emotional low of just being really sad with Halen about like this lost singular best friend, kind of like soulmate vibe that he had with Aster, like seeing this suffering, like even though like I was like really frustrated with how destructive he kept bumping, I understand why he is like that. And it's kind of reminds me of an episode of South Park where Stan, I think as a child, like he's going through his parents' divorce. I don't know if you guys have seen the episode, right? And he becomes like super depressed and actually like an alcoholic, and his pain is being exhibited at some level, but he's annoying to everybody. People don't want to be around him because even though like know that he's like sad or whatever, he's just a bummer. And I felt like I was kind of entering that like meme space of like, you're being a bummer to me, Halen, you're right. But really the, it's just a reminder that this is a broken soul, and this is what like real depression like is like. So had to like remind myself that I need to be a good person.
Oh, good.
And then my other high, you know, was just the whole throwback to my writing in this binary language. I like had totally forgotten that I did this. But it always comes back to me when I see ones and zeros in this kind of way. And just seeing it everywhere, I was just like, my heart was racing. Like I was anxious to like, oh, let me like pause and translate this. But then like anxious energy of like, I don't know it anymore. It's been so long. I'm so ashamed. So that was like a high, was just like that adrenaline and excitement that came from that. So like, you know, and I'm all, anybody knows me, I love learning languages. I'm all about languages, and this is one of them, and I really am going to get back on it. Thank you, episode 2. Thank you, Harmony.
Yay, speaking computer. Okay, well, my first high is the cinematography. It was magic. Thank you, episode. I'm like looking in a crayon box, and it makes me very happy. My low, it was Eric. That made me really sad. I liked him a lot. So seeing that phone glued on him and them punishing him was very, very, very sad. Even though he was pretend, I was really proud of them for making me feel that way about this side character that I feel like maybe was supposed to be annoying. I don't know. And then, of course, the other high is Harmony being like the best badass bitch ever. Her acting was just amazing and beautiful. I got lost. I didn't even care about anything else that I was watching, as I was present. So good job, Harmony. She did it for me.
All right, guys. Well, where are you supposed to go next? We have our two survivors. I think we talked about this a little bit. I personally think they're going to try to work for a way off the beacon rather than finding a way to just stay happy on the beacon, regardless of Halen's good feelings of trying to help ships on their way through that part of space. He's not cut out for beacon life, and I think he wants to leave. You know, he'll work to that end. And with us learning that Harmony has been imprinted on him as well as Aster, she will do everything she can to help him.
That feels like a really obvious thing that's going to happen. So yeah, I'm supportive of this. She's going to try to get off. She's going to help him. Okay. But I'm thinking that this beacon is in really terrible shape, and it has to have already given some kind of like notification somewhere on this traffic infrastructure to alert somebody that they need to come take care of it. Even though he said there's been like 68 days that no ships have come by. I don't know. Why is that? Are we going to discover that Olive has like a way of programming things so that like whatever is happening in the decision making of where transport stuff goes is intentionally bypassing Beacon 23, you know? So I'm interested to see more infrastructure from Olive's like reach. I want to see more of how that works.
Oh, interesting. I like that. Yes, Paul, I think that at some point he's gonna take off because he is a pilot, so it's good to see him fly. However, I agree with Inez. Like, I think that we need to see ISA at some point. They need to make a presence. I would like if they did that soon. I think that's what's going to happen, but I would like to know more about like the artifact and the rock and its significance too. So I'm for ISA showing up, and while he's there just talking to the rock or learning more about the rock. I want to know if the artifact is going to be like a main character in this season or not.
Right. I feel like the artifact like has to. And so, yeah, like I'm thinking that we're supposed to be able to see some continuation of that story. But I just want to add one more. And that's something you mentioned earlier, Paul. I'm ready to see the AI wars on the AI plane. I think that would be really cool. Yeah. I love all of these like battles in this space. So like, I want to see like how dark these kind of characters could go.
Oh yeah. Well, we know from the previous episode that Olive is willing to play very dirty. He was asked, why didn't he just kill him? And his answer kind of amounted to that he kind of liked to see him suffer so that he would be able to be a cautionary tale to others. If he'd just been killed outright, well, that's kind of expected. But if he's made to suffer, then maybe others will think twice about that enduring pain.
Yeah, good story. Good story, and it's a warning. Man, do I wish that we could just follow Olive around? I want to see him hunt down the column. That needs to be a spinoff show.
Ooh, yes.
I love seeing him angry. It makes me very happy. I feel power. I feel the power come off of him and through the screen into me.
He begats all over you.
Yeah.
Unless it's sloppy.
There we go. Jesus. Jesus, Pablo. I'm seeing a Pablo.
That's funny.
Pablo side out of you. All right.
Well, I think that does it for the second episode of Beacon 23. Again, if you like this podcast, please consider leaving us a review or a rating on iTunes, Spotify, or YouTube, or wherever you found this podcast, so that other people can find the podcast as well. We'll be back for the next episode of Beacon 23 next week. Thanks a lot.
Yay. Thank you for listening. This has been an original Pod Clubhouse production. Pod Clubhouse is a podcast network dedicated to encouraging collaboration among podcasters and friends to bring a fresh voice and diverse perspective on a wide array of content. Please visit and leave a comment for us at podclubhouse.com. Rate, review, and subscribe to our podcast feeds on Apple Podcasts. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. You can find us at Pod Clubhouse. Our DMs are always open, and we'd love to hear from you.
Pod Clubhouse.